Our Old Testament reading drops us right into the middle of a story, and in doing so, drops us into the middle of a storm. Now, today, you may not need one more storm in your story, but this one is a story of hope for a future when there is no hope, and we all need more of that kind of story. This is the big one in the Old Testament. The liberation of Israel is at stake. And so is the liberation of Egypt, though they didn't know to see it that way yet. Both were caught in a system of oppression that had enslaved them. Israel needed to be free from slavery to stand upright, created in the image of God. Egypt needed to be liberated from the violent, unjust way of life in which they were trapped. One needed freedom and didn't think they could ever have it. The other needed justice, but were afraid to let go of their privilege and power and couldn't imagine life without them. The showdown at the Red Sea isn't just a conflict between Israel and Egypt. It's a conflict between past and future, between death and life, between darkness and light. And it has raged all through the centuries, and it goes on in the hearts of each person. We are dropped into the middle of the storm. The people of Israel have begun their exodus. After 400 years in slavery, after the return of Moses and the 10 plagues of Egypt, they have, in the dead of night, under the protection of the Spirit of God, fled from Egypt on foot. They were free, but their problems have just begun. Once they left, Pharaoh and the Egyptians realized what they were losing: free labor to build their cities and sustain their economy. And perhaps just as important, another race of people cowering before you in fear gives you an overinflated sense of power. And who doesn't like to feel powerful? For as long as anyone could remember, the people of Israel had been a convenient source of manual and psychological fuel for the engine of Egyptian glory. Their lives didn't matter to the Egyptians any more than the number of bricks they could make from mud and straw in a given day. Slavery of every kind is the devil's ultimate corruption of human nature. And by no means is this just ancient history or merely a spiritual metaphor. Slavery makes people less than human. It reduces God's beloved creatures to mere objects to be used by someone else. Slavery and its unholy refrains in our nation's history haunt the hallowed halls of our faith, and for many people turn our national hymns of freedom into noisy gongs and clanging cymbals. Who can't understand how painful this is? The yearning to be and live free is utterly human and is utterly at the heart of the liberating God of Israel. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. By the time we join the story, God has set his people free, and now they're gone, walking off into the desert wilderness without even looking back. Power does not often relinquish its grip easily, and so even after 10 plagues, after all the suffering they had been through, to the point of Pharaoh telling Moses, "Go, take your people and go," even after all of that, Pharaoh's anger boiled. His resentment, the comeuppance of these people, seethed within him. He wanted them back. He wanted revenge. He wanted the old way of life restored. And it's hard to know which was most important to him at this moment. Pharaoh orders his militia, "Saddle up your horses, load up your chariots. We're going to take back what is ours." Not even who is ours, but just what is ours. And so, not long after Israel's men, women, and children trudged into the desert, Egypt's strong men galloped after them. This is where we join the story. Israel's walk away has brought them to the edge, the shore of a large and deep sea. They can't go forward. But behind them comes Egypt's army. They can't go back. They can't go forward. They can't go back. That experience of being stuck is an all too familiar human experience. In English, we say, I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. In a French idiom, you're between a sledgehammer and an anvil. An ancient Latin proverb laments, a precipice in front, wolves behind. A Scottish soldier in a 17th century war described their predicament as being between the devil and the deep blue sea. In one of the best of U2's songs, they sing, you're stuck in a moment and you can't get out of it. Being stuck, ironically, is often the prelude to true freedom. We can't just see the path yet from there. Sheldon von Aachen was a young, skeptical, erudite graduate student at Oxford who began trading letters with C.S. Lewis about Christianity and love and life. In his memoir, A Severe Mercy, von Aachen recalls how Lewis guided him to faith in Christ until he found himself stuck at the critical crisis of faith. He wrote to Lewis, in my old easygoing theism, I had regarded Christianity as a sort of fairy tale, and I had neither accepted nor rejected Jesus, since I had never, in fact, encountered him. But now I had. The position was not, as I had been comfortably thinking all these months, merely a question of whether I was to accept the Messiah or not. It was a question of whether I was to accept him or reject him. My God, he writes, there was a gap behind me too. Perhaps the leap to acceptance was a horrifying gamble, but what of the leap to rejection? There might be no certainty that Christ was God, but by God, there was no certainty that he was not. Israel, in this moment, was stuck something like that. There was no certainty in going forward, and none in going back. They'd gone as far as they could go. They can't walk on water, and they can't swim, and they can't defeat the Egyptian army. And now they're angry at Moses for getting them into this mess and for giving them false hope, and angry at themselves for believing something so foolish as slaves can walk free. Can slaves be free? This is the burning existential and political question hanging over this story at the critical moment. You can walk away for a while, but can you be truly free? Pharaoh's raging army is desperate to prove the answer is no. No, Egypt says, you can never be truly free from me. Egypt is a powerful image here of evil. You'll always be pulled back, pushed back, dragged back to the life you had before, if that's even a life. You'll always belong to what owns you and controls you and will use you. St. Paul tells new Christians in Romans 6 that they have been set free from the catastrophe of slavery to sin. But they all know sooner or later that Egypt still wants to pull them back. The pull of our past sins and addictions, temptations is a powerful magnetic force resisting our progress toward freedom, righteousness, and life with God. Even St. Paul felt it. After declaring emancipation in Christ from sin, Paul then reflectively wonders in Romans 7, but if all this is true, why do I do what I don't want to do? Why don't I do what I want to do? Oh, wretched man that I am, who will free me from this body of death? From this angle, we are each Israel and we are each Egypt. We can read ourselves into both sides of this struggle, a struggle that plays out within us. This tug of war, this battle rages in us between the freedom we desire to live in and for Christ and the chains of captivity we still wear from Egypt. If Egypt wouldn't just straight up kill you, sometimes it seems easier to just go back and live bent over. Being bent over, that was one of C.S. Lewis's most memorable images of life under oppression of enemies within and without that want to keep us in our chains. But life is not to be found in going back to Egypt. You may survive for a while, but it will kill you. It will rob you of your soul. It will steal away your hope. They can't go back. But they can't go forward unless God provides a way where there is no way. This is the miracle at the heart of the story. This is the miracle at the heart of the gospel. This is the good news of a God who delights in providing a way when there's no way. They were stuck, and God provided a way through the sea. They were dead, and God provided a way of life. This is the resurrection story for Israel. This is their baptism story, into the water and then out to walk in newness of life. The sea parted and Israel crossed on dry ground. There was no way until there was. They could see no way forward until a way appeared. They could do nothing more on their own strength, and then God's grace saved them. Egypt's army wouldn't give up that easily. Egypt's army followed right on behind them. Out of their minds, they followed them. Evil does not give up easily. They followed behind them, but the wheels of their chariots mired in the mud and the water collapsed back on them until they were drowned. Safe on the other side of the sea, Israel looked back and saw the terror of Egypt washed up dead on the seashore. Martin Luther King preached a sermon early in his ministry called The Death of Evil Upon the Seashore. In reflecting on this scene, Egypt, this overwhelming, powerful force of evil, was now behind them. Evil was dead on the seashore. King preached. The story symbolizes something basic about the universe. Its meaning is not found in the drowning of a few men, for no one should rejoice at the death or defeat of a human being. This story, at bottom, symbolizes the death of evil. It was the death of inhuman oppression and unjust exploitation. The death of the Egyptians upon the seashore is a glaring symbol of the ultimate doom of evil and its struggle with good. There's something in the very nature of the universe which is on the side of Israel in its struggle with every Egypt. There's something in the very nature of the universe which ultimately comes to the aid of goodness in its perennial struggle with evil. Oh, brothers and sisters, Israel and Egypt are all around and somewhere within each of us. Is there a place in your life where you're stuck between the two? And it feels like you can't go forward and you can't go back? A place where you yearn for freedom but can't break free? A place where you desire to live justly but you can't break free from the past for all that will cost you? When you find yourself stuck and you can't go forward another step, but you can't go back either, look to God. Do not be afraid. The brothers of the Taizé community in France regularly sing a chorus with those words. It must be heartening to sing that often when you're in Taizé, France, in the area of the world where the Germans and the Allies battled ferociously for every inch of ground in the not-too-distant past, when it seemed the fate of the world was hanging by a thread, only in hope where it seemed like there was no hope. Look to God. Do not be afraid. Lift up your voices. The Lord is near, always. Lift up your voices. The Lord is nearer than you know. When you find yourself stuck and can't get out of it, salvation is nearer than you know. And sometimes that stuck place is the way to true freedom. Martin Luther King foresaw an American journey to justice that would come to such a crisis point, and believed that God would show a way forward for all of us to live out the dream of freedom and justice. Paul envisioned the grace of Christ as liberation from slavery and freedom to serve God. And Jesus taught that life is fraught with all kinds of shackles and chains, but the way of grace is the way of freedom. It's a costly way. It will cost you everything. But it's the only way. And in Jesus, even a cross is not the end of the story. We're never totally and finally, hopelessly stuck. When there is no way, for those who walk in faith, God makes a way. God always makes a way.